So good morning, and as Rosemary said, I'm going to be presenting some work that's in collaboration with many different people. Jane Clarity was on the program, but she's not here today, and she heads up our group, as well as Peggy Shepherd from We Act for Environmental Justice. And so I'm going to be talking today about spatial relationships between two very different yet related exposures of outdoor air pollution and community psychosocial stress. And I start with these three maps, just two of, So on the left here, we can see the persistent geographic patterning in childhood asthma across New York City. And despite citywide improvements over the past decade, these disparities are still not explained well by any of the known risk factors. And so there's growing interest in methods to look at potentially interacting effects between chemical and non-chemical stressors. And so from a spatial perspective, when we look at this map alongside of a map of PM2.5 and as well as census poverty, we can see that from a spatial perspective, asthma seems to almost be more powerfully predicted by poverty than by air pollution. It's raising lots of questions about what specific aspects of low SES might be contributing to this population susceptibility. So to look at this, so to kind of dig into this puzzle of population susceptibility, one distinct mechanism through which it's operating is chronic stress. So in this work, we conceptualize community social stress as neighborhood-level exposures, such as lack of access to resource or rates of violent crime, as well as noise. And we're focused on stress here because it's been shown to alter physiologic responses, particularly in the immune and endocrine systems, that are also commonly common pathways in asthma etiology and exacerbation. On top of this, air pollution may be spatially correlated with neighborhood psychosocial stressors, and there's been a very deep literature in the environmental justice community linking these disproportionate exposures with SES. So the hypotheses of interest here include direct impacts of air pollution on respiratory health, also a deep literature there, direct effects of stress on respiratory health, and particularly what we're interested in is how stress may modify the relationship between air pollution and respiratory health. And so to address these hypotheses, we start by characterizing the relative spatial distributions of, again, these very different but related exposures, and then quantifying their spatial correlation across New York City as a way to begin to see the potential for investigating synergistic effects. And so here I'll be presenting correlation results looking at relationships among various different stressor indicators as well as between air pollution and psychosocial stressors. So starting with the New York City Community Air Survey, which our PI, Jane Clarity, headed up, was a program at the New York City Department of Health in cooperation with the mayor's office. Now entering its third year, the Community Air Survey, it was a citywide study monitoring street-level air pollution of multiple pollutants across 150 locations, and then using land use regression techniques to estimate smooth surface concentrations across the whole city, providing a really unique high-resolution data set to look at interurban variability in air pollution. Here on the top row, you can see three different pollutants, PM2.5, SO2 and ozone, and you can see how this study was really able to capture some very, very fine scale resolution in these air pollution concentrations. On the bottom row, you can see the effects of aggregation, which are powerful. We lose a lot of that fine scale variability within neighborhoods. However, it's necessary to compare it with other exposure metrics. So just to kind of summarize some points about, you know, how we do translate this into policy, the New York City Community Air Survey was very instrumental for parsing out the contribution of building heating oil, particularly numbers 4 and 6, to overall city pollution levels, and was very supportive of the mayor and city council for passing new rules requiring low sulfur fuels that are going to take effect in 2012. So that was a really big win. They've also been this ongoing study of the fine scale year-round study in its third year has been used to evaluate air quality effects of interventions that have displaced traffic lanes with pedestrian areas. This is an architectural rendering of Times Square, which is one of a very high pollution area, and they've blocked it off. And so then using the year-round structure and site, fine-scale structure of NICAS, they were able to show, this is a graph from the city's report, the mayor's office report, demonstrating the success of this pedestrian plaza for reducing air pollution at the Times Square location. And you can see the reduction there between spring and summer of 2009. So, and lastly, it's been able to kind of improve the scale of health effects estimation for a health impact assessment that the City Department of Health is engaged in. So, this is a long list of the different indicators of community-level psychosocial stressors that we identified in publicly available data sets from multiple city agencies. And our criteria for inclusion included citywide coverage, temporal concordance, as well as, most importantly, that the stressor constructs captured resonated with individual-level assessment tools. Different surveys and metrics that are used to assess psychosocial stress in the medical field, such as neighborhood disorder and different child-specific indicators, were specifically targeted. And so these are ways that we are trying to here use publicly available data sets. And you can see the range of constructs that are captured there in the left, in the left-hand column. And just as this is a spatial study, I just wanted to kind of show you some of the spatial distributions that we have across New York City. And so here is assaults by police precinct, serious housing violations, substantiated cases of abuse and child abuse and neglect. This is a self-report indicator of having gone without needed medical care in the past year. Again, self-report noise disruption of daily activities, and then census poverty. And what you can also see here, you can also begin to get a sense of our unit of analysis and the challenge that we have with different administrative units for all of these different indicators that we want to include. So before we proceed, we need to address that issue of incongruent administrative units and then check our assumptions. So one thing that I developed was and validated was a method to compare across these units. So in GIS and R, we calculated used percent overlap between administrative areas to create a kind of a weighted spatial matrix to then reformulate all of these indicators into a common unit of analysis. We were able to utilize the NICAS fine-scale spatial distributions to validate our ability of these reformulated areas to actually predict the underlying variability that was going. A challenge for a lot of this pre-aggregated data is that you don't know what the underlying distribution is, and so you never know what you're messing with. And so we were able to use the NICAS smooth surfaces as a known distribution to kind of check how our method was working across a range of spatial distributions and units of analysis. So again, obviously this is the limits for this method are about from this within area variability, but as a means of exploring global spatial correlations, potentially very useful. So in terms of our assumptions for our model, autocorrelation is important because it violates the assumptions of independence between observation and a linear regression. So, and we know just by looking at the maps, you could very obviously see that we have very strong clustering of these spatial phenomena, which is exactly what how they operate. They are clustered. So we expected this. We measure bivariate and univariate Morant's eye index to test for autocorrelation, and then employ simultaneous autoregressive modeling utilizing spatial weights to incorporate relative distance information in our calculation of correlation. And it's beyond the scope of this talk, but we found that incorporating this spatial information not only improved our model fit as measured by the AIC, the that criteria, but also really influenced our measures of correlation in pretty unpredictable ways. Sometimes, you know, we would see a significant correlation where in an OLS model we had not seen a significant correlation, or vice versa. So here are some of those indicators. These are pretty much the same one, thank you. The same indicators of the maps that I showed you before. And so if you can see, it's along the top we have, or it's just a correlation matrix with serious housing violations, again, which may be an indicator of persistent landlord neglect and dilapidation in the house, which is very frustrating. Noise disruption, a composite indicator of major felony crimes, as well as felonious assault. Going, again, the self-report, lack of going without medical care, and having to delay rent payments due to financial stress. And what we can see from this table is that we see, you know, some correlations where we would expect to, but those blank boxes are where we don't see significant correlation. And particularly striking is the column showing poverty as it relates to these different social stressors. So indicating to us that not only are there non-uniform patterns between these different stressors, but that a broad association of stress with poverty may not be appropriate, and that we can't move forward using poverty as a proxy for all of these other things, which I think actually is the primary contribution of our work so far. When we look at, again, these are just the three pollutants that I showed you the maps of, but also measured in NICAS are elemental carbon, NO2, NO, and various constituents of PM. But just for consistency, and here we see a really a much more strikingly empty correlation matrix where we do not see, we see kind of the expected you know, inverse relationship between PM and O2 for major felony crimes, but non-significant spatial correlation with all these other subset of stressors that we're looking at here. So this is not, you know, this table doesn't say that there's no relationship between stress and air pollution, but what it means is not all high air pollution neighborhoods also have high stress. Really presenting an encouraging table, I mean, an encouraging picture for our main question, which is the investigation of interaction or potentially synergistic effects. So in conclusion, we are encouraged to move forward towards this question about how chemical and non-chemical stressors may interact for asthma outcomes, and also bringing out even more questions about the how we can reduce confounding and account for those kind of questions in epidemiologic research. We have a very exciting next few years under the EPA STAR grant that Dr. Clowerty and et al. Was awarded. And right now we're beginning to bring together focus groups with WEACT in New York City to validate these public data as actually important resonant indicators of psychosocial stress across different neighborhoods in New York, really kind of you know, looking at what is the value and utility of these publicly available indicators as exposure metrics in this case. And then We're going to be follow that up with a survey of about 1,000 adults in New York City, trying to understand the relationship between individual level stress experience and community level exposure. Then epidemiology, of course, where we take all of this into account. And again, particularly germane to this panel, WEACT will be convening what is tentatively called the New York City Clean Air Network, consisting of groups of residents across the city, where they'll be engaged in ongoing effort to continue to identify these different community-based psychosocial stressors and then develop plans to address them within the community. Our STAR grant is not as explicitly, we're not doing policy work here, but are able to really extend this work and our findings and move it forward through this community-based structure. So with that, thank you so much for listening, and I'd like to acknowledge our funding as well as all the members of the NICAS team at the Department of Health, Queens College, and Zev Ross. So thank you.